Welcome to the final episode of Season 1 of Fresh from the Hill, Inside Stories of Noteworthy Cornellians. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the first season of our new podcast. Greatest hits from the Aaron Camino Smith series will feature interviews from the following episodes. Making Something Beautiful from a Pile of Dirt, featuring Justin Kondrat, class of 2014. The Value of People, featuring Julio Casado, class of 2008. The Business of Broadway, featuring Dana Lerner, class of 2014. Empowering Podcast Creators, featuring Nir Zuckerman, class of 2008. And The Lucky Break, featuring Ritu Raman, class of 2012. Please enjoy this episode and go back and check out the full versions at alumni.cornell.edu/podcast. We'll be back on Wednesday, August 7th with Season 2. We'll bring you full episodes with new hosts, guests, and topics. We hope you've enjoyed Season 1. Happy listening.
I think some of my best classes were obviously all the architecture classes that I took. The studio class was the big one. That was the one where everyone was up late at night. And I wish they would have just said the biggest lesson you're going to learn is to make a decision and have a big, solid reason for why you've made that decision, and then let every other decision in your design be informed by that decision.
I come from a low-income family. I also was diagnosed with dyslexia from a young age. They even thought that I wasn't even going to graduate high school. Sure did I prove them wrong.
You showed them.
Yes, I did, and through plants. I was inspired by my grandmother working side by side in the garden, cultivating the land, making something beautiful out of just a, pile of dirt. So from that moment, I just fell in love with horticulture.
I took a series of classes at the business school, and those were great classes. It helped me connect a lot what I learned in ILR with a very different way of thinking about people in the workforce. For better or for worse, thinking about them as an asset, with a dollar sign attached to them. And that was important for me in my career, and I think it actually helps a lot with what I have to do with what I do now, which is, again, understanding that people are the largest cost when it comes to running a business, and the right thing isn't to skimp on that cost. The right thing is to making sure that you're setting up people for as much success as possible, because that's going to produce the most business value.
I was a theater major in the College of Arts and Sciences. So for me, I really wanted to get a liberal arts education, but study theater and a broad education of theater. So not a fine, not a BFA or a conservatory program, but really just study theater, learn all about theater, get to play sort of all the time, but also taking language and history and science and things like that.
My story, basically the story is I went to Cornell and I majored in government, and I did the thing that government majors do, which is I went to law school. Because what else do you do when you're a government major?
Teach about government.
Or that.
Yes.
Or that, yeah. Actually, my college roommate who I lived with at Cornell, who I met freshman year of Cornell, he went down the academic route. He was also a government major. And I went down the legal route, and I went to NYU Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time that I graduated, I had sort of fallen out of love with law, if I was ever in love with it, and then fallen in love with programming. I just started teaching myself and fell in love with it so much that by the time that I graduated law school, I decided I'd rather be an engineer.
And I didn't realize that there's this whole process here that's like taking SATs and writing essays and getting letters of recommendation. So I was like, I don't really know how to do this. And I figured I was afraid to ask, and the internet didn't have as much information on it as that time, about 10 years ago. And I was very confused, and I heard somebody say that Ivy League is a good thing. And so I looked up what an Ivy League college was. And around that time, my career aspiration was also to be an astronaut, because that's the sort of thing that a teenager thinks about.
Naturally.
And I was like, all right, well, I know that Ivy League is the good thing, and I know that Cornell has the best engineering school in the Ivy League, so I'm going to apply there.
It's what anyone in any creative field does. If you're going to make a movie about XYZ, make sure that everything in the movie reinforces XYZ. If you're going to create a song that is trying to create a certain tone, then make sure every note in the song enforces that tone, and that's all architecture is.
I'm a big believer in teaching yourself things that you're interested in. There's no better way to teach yourself something than find a topic that you're actually really motivated to learn, right? The best motivator is an excitement about what you want to learn.
I feel like we live in a time of like so much fear. You know, it's driving our political climate. It's driving a lot of the conflict that I think is happening for people because everything is changing so quickly. You know, in our lifetimes, think about how much things have changed. And I think if I didn't grow up in a place like this, I probably would be scared for my life. Like, your phone, you know, cliche, but your phone can do so much more than the computer you had at home when you were young, right? I think that we need to do a better job helping people cope with that fear by giving them hope. And the only way you can give someone hope is by showing them that there are real opportunities on the way, and there are. People aren't going to be thrown out on the streets if we have ways of helping them just shift their skills. You know, we're not talking about complete reskilling or retraining, taking a coal miner and teaching them how to build an AI computer programmer. It's about just shifting that English major into language design for computer programs, right? I think that that's what we need to do more of. And I really like being in this space because, again, it gives people hope and it makes them feel like I didn't waste 8 years, you know, studying English at Cornell and then getting the master's or maybe getting the PhD. It wasn't a big waste, right? You never want people to feel that way about something that they dedicated so much time to at some point.
I majored in mechanical engineering, mostly because the department was called mechanical and aerospace engineering. Again, astronaut. See, like I, you know, for a 15, 16 year old, I was pretty focused on that dream. But then I couldn't get into intro to aerospace in my first year. And so another lucky break, a girl that I met at Balch Hall was like, you know, I'm taking intro to biomedical engineering and the professor has a really cool British accent. So I was like, yeah, I'll do that. So I took that class instead. And, you know, I learned that, you know, I knew for a long time that, you know, medicine is cool, but I'm kind of squeamish. And I was like, well, I don't want to see blood and touch gross things. So I was like, I'm not going to go to medical school. But I didn't realize that there was so much that you could do as an engineer to impact medicine and to help people through medical implants or devices or other technologies. And so I think that sort of really captured my imagination. And after that, the astronaut dream kind of died away. And this idea of being a mechanical engineer that makes medical devices to help people really took root. And since then, it's been kind of straight sailing.
Unfortunately, I think as we see in our culture, sort of the arts are having some flux. There's like a lot of transition and people are trying to figure out how to fund the arts, and especially if the arts aren't necessarily as lucrative as other types of research or like tech or things like that, right? I think a lot of places, not just educational, but just other institutions are trying to figure out like what to do with it. I'm glad that Cornell still has the theater major. I know they've done a lot to restructure it. When I was there, it was called the Department of Theater, Film, and Dance, and now it's called Performing and Media Arts. So I think, you know, this rebranding, perhaps trying to get more people to participate and maybe not just be so scary.
A lot of people, you know, in society, they don't really understand. It's always down at their phone or not looking up. I mean, one of the greatest things is to look up. One of the greatest gifts that I learned at Cornell was, you know, to look up. You know, the trees will tell you, you know, and you look what season it is, or there might be some animals in there. I mean, so there again, they can tell you so much. So I think people really need to slow down. You know, the plants will continue to grow, but you need to watch them grow. Like, just slow down. And they can tell you a lot about kind of what's going on. And I mean, they just help so much with spaces, with, you know, getting your hands in the dirt, so to speak, or having a beautiful flower that you haven't seen. There again, I like to say it's like seeing an old friend, right? You haven't seen them in a while, but then when they bloom, it's like, oh, I missed you. I didn't realize how much I missed you.
After about 2 years, I left architecture because when I was in high school, I did improv comedy. And when I was at Cornell, I was in the Whistling Shrimp improv comedy group. It was a lot of fun and was another part of my life at Cornell, totally different from architecture.
In my junior year at Cornell, I heard about this program called the Kessler Fellowship for Entrepreneurial Engineers. And I applied to it thinking, well, maybe I can get a master's and I can go do a startup. And that sounds like an exciting thing to do. So through that program, I actually was able to pick any startup that I wanted and work there over summer. And I actually worked at a startup in Ithaca, in that sort of startup-y area near the airport. It was called Rionix. And when I was working there, I had a lot of fun, but I realized that people doing the jobs that I thought were interesting or that I wanted to do all had a PhD. So I was like, I guess that's what I got to do. I got to do a PhD.
You know, I think back on it now, and I also think about what I would have done if my kid came up to me and said, I just, you know, went to law school for 3 years, but now I want to do this totally different thing. At the time, it didn't seem like that big a deal because the job market for lawyers when I graduated law school was so bad. And I was looking for a legal job. It's not like I totally swore it off. While I was in law school, I was studying and I was doing the thing that law students do where they try to get jobs at firms. And it just, probably because the job market was so bad, it was really hard for me. And so when I made the decision to become a programmer, it wasn't like, I don't want to do law. It was, this is really hard and there's this other thing I'm really interested in. Let me see if that can turn into something. And I ended up getting my first programming job straight out of law school really, really quickly after tons and tons of rejections from law firms and public interest legal offices and all these different things, just very disheartening. But the tech community in New York was so hot, it still is, that getting a programming job was shockingly easy for a guy who had absolutely no formal training in it.
My experience with Cornell launched me directly into my career right after, which was the labor relations, human resources world. I had a credit internship at Cornell in Disney World, which was a really great experience. It was actually the first time I ever went to Disney World as an adult. I got free passes to the park, so I visited every single park. I lived in Orlando for like 6 months. Got to meet people, did a lot of traveling because I actually had money in my pocket. That was pretty cool. And even came back to Cornell with a car, which made the second half of junior year a lot of fun. You know, that credit internship set me up. I mean, I think I got my first job more because of the experiences I had at the internship than even from what I studied.
It's not just because you go to Cornell, it's what you do with the opportunities that present themselves. So I've had a slew of internships ranging from at the Cornell Botanic Garden, where I helped with programming and marketing for the summer. So I always spend a summer in Ithaca, which I would highly recommend. And if you haven't had the chance, for any alumni listening, definitely go back and visit, even if it's for a reunion or whatnot. Go back. It's absolutely stunning. And definitely go visit the Cornell Botanic Garden. It definitely is a gem.
You know how everyone gets in like the frenzy of the recruiting buzz when all of the companies come back to campus and like the young alumni come back with their company and it's like all of these huge companies and everyone goes, even if you're not, right, like not a banker or whatever, you go. And I went to all these companies and like I went to Google and I was like, here's my resume. They're like, so you don't know how to code? And I was like, no, but I really think you could be the next Netflix, right? So this was in 2013, 2014, right? And I was like, and they were like, so, but you've never taken a computer programming class, like a software? And I was like, no, but like, I really have great creative ideas. And they were like, no, we like, you can't, we're not taking your resume.
So the comedy is great. I have a podcast that's a lot of fun, which I promote on this podcast many times, but I will never miss an opportunity to promote it. So it's a podcast called But I Also. It's a podcast exploring not only what you do for a living, but also what else you love to do.
I really believe in the shows that I work on. So Indecent on Broadway was the show that was nominated for the Tony. And I saw it off Broadway when it had its smaller run, mm-hmm. and I fell in love with it, and I knew I had to be a part of it, and it was transferring to Broadway, and so that was the time that I could get involved.
You know, to me, the Latino Living Center is not just because I'm Latino, it's because we need more centers around themes that people can identify with, whether it be your ethnicity, your race, something that you study, your religion, anything. It's just to bring people together to do things together. Because that's the only way for you to make the most out of your Cornell experience.
My PhD was very much focused on using biological materials and exploiting how they sense and adapt to their environments. And what I'm trying to do at MIT is thinking about, can we engineer new synthetic materials, different types of polymers or metals, that also sense and respond to their environments in the same way that biological materials do?
There are people who create content that don't want to make a career out of it. They don't need to be Joe Rogan, who's one of the biggest podcasters in the world. They can be an average person talking about a niche topic with an audience out there that's engaged, and there's probably a brand or an advertiser who's willing to pay for it, or there's no brand out there that's willing to pay for it, but there's an audience that's interested enough in that topic that they're willing to subscribe or support you through some kind of patronage model. Mm-hmm. Or give you some kind of tip, or maybe they're willing to buy your merch. There are a lot of really, really interesting creative ways that people, whether you have an audience that is large or not, can make money in the space.
You know, I've always had this connection ever since I was little there again with my grandmother, and every plant really, you know, that we grew, I remember the smell, the size, when it bloomed. So I was thinking, what can I do to kind of honor her? She passed away about 4 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, what could I do? And, you know, there again, art, you know, because I am an artist. I was thinking, why don't I get a tattoo? I mean, it forever marks. So I ended up researching. I was like, what plant do I really have that's really close to me and that would really kind of emulate what I feel? And I came back and I thought of the pansy, so the viola. Mm-hmm. So actually, my mom's name is Viola. So, you know, I was like, hey, perfect. That's perfect. But the pansy, really, there again, I do identify as a member of the LGBTQ community. I identify as queer. And, you know, thinking horticulturally, the pansy is really just tenacious. It's really resilient. No matter how long much it's knocked down with the ice and the snow, it always comes back up with a smiling face. It always shows that face proudly.
Go Big Red. I don't know why, but that's just, I just get excited to say Go Big Red and think Cornell hockey and go into hockey games. And I feel like some people say, I found my voice at my first job. I found my voice yelling at Cornell hockey games.
Being a part of Cornell, you're sort of instantly welcomed into the Cornell family of all of the alumni and all of the students and everyone who's involved. I'm very fortunate in that my dad went to Cornell and my brother also went to Cornell, and we overlapped a year. So I was a senior and he was a freshman. So it's always just been really fun to be at Cornell, go back up to Cornell when my brother was a student and I was a graduate. I actually learned how to walk at my dad's 15th college reunion. So I was like 13 months or whatever. My birthday's in May and reunion is June. And yeah, I think they just sort of like let me loose on the art squad, and there it is.
I came in, you know, and kind of like the immediate word on the street was like, this young guy from Cornell is here. And I think that they were expecting something different. Like, they were expecting a very arrogant person who was going to come in and kind of know it all. But, you know, I didn't approach them in that way. You know, I kind of just said, hey, I know I'm new. I'm here to learn. I took the time to get to know everyone. But I was also very strong about my, you know, my convictions. If I felt something was wrong or something needed to be taken action upon, I did it. And luckily, I had really, really great support from managers, even all the way up to the vice president, who was a Cornell alum as well.
There's something kind of newer that I'm starting right now. It's a new initiative. It's called the Women in STEM Database at MIT, or WISDOM. It's a very clever acronym. We're quite proud of it. But essentially, we're trying to address the problem of the fact that a lot of science conferences and events still, they're predominantly male speakers. And I would really like to see more diverse speakers at panels and events so that people have different perspectives and diverse perspectives to listen to. But I think because there are so few women in a lot of different STEM fields, it can be hard to find somebody that's a good fit. So what I'm trying to do is just create a database of women at MIT who are interested in speaking opportunities and list kind of the science things and the outside of science things that they know about and care about and can speak to, and have that database available and open to people. So if they're ever like, well, I didn't invite any women to speak at this event because I, you know, don't know any women to invite, I'm trying to remove that excuse of saying, here's a database of some great women, hit them up, call them, have them at your event and make it better.
Company is basically everything you need end-to-end to make a podcast. The way that I think about podcasting historically is the space is riddled with points of friction. You have to buy hardware, you have to buy software, probably there's open source stuff, but it's confusing and you don't really know how to get it. You have to learn how to use it. You have to pay to host your audio, which I have strong opinions about why that's not a thing that makes sense these days. You have to pay to host it. You have to know how to distribute it. You have to understand the technology that is powering this thing. You have to individually send your podcast to all of the different platforms that allow for podcasts to be consumed. If you want it to be on Spotify versus Apple versus whatever else, it's all manual submission processes. And all of those points of friction prevent average people from doing what they want to do, which is just create interesting content, right? If you want to create video on the internet, you have a phone in your pocket, you take it out, you film a video, you put it on YouTube, you don't pay for anything, you don't have to know anything.
It's true.
And you can, people have amazingly made entire careers out of that, right? Or people have just, as hobbyists, wanting to create video or write articles on the internet about interesting topics that they're passionate about. They can do it in any other medium, but they can't do it in podcasting. You know, the number of points of friction that exist between a person coming up with an idea and actually having a podcast in Apple Podcasts or in Spotify that they can tell somebody to go out and listen to, the drop-off there is probably insane. The size of the market of creators that would have existed 15 years ago, if a company like Anchor had existed back then, this landscape would look completely different.
I spoke and she asked me, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'm going to go to Cornell University to study plant science. No matter how long it takes me, I'm going to get there. And she said, you know that's an Ivy League, right?
In that tone?
In that tone.
Uh-oh.
And so I was like, okay, well, now you gave me more ammo to do what I need to do. So from that moment, I knew that I was destined to go to Cornell.
Thank you so much for joining us this episode and this season of Fresh from the Hill. Our music was written, produced, and performed by Kia Albertson Rogers, class of 2013. You can contact Kia at koa3@cornell.edu and find his music online at kiaorion.com. Learn more about the podcast and join our mailing list at alumni.cornell.edu/podcast. Want to get more involved with Cornell? Check out our website, alumni.cornell.edu/youngalumni. Thanks so much for listening and catch you next week.